a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And the sir, that's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's still plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that, he hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
This is Late Hits.
Late Hits.
On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Oh, guess who's back in the building? This is the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN on the HRMP listener line, on the text line, on Twitter, at PCreighton1. Sean Mapes on the other side of the glass, the master controls, at Sean A. Mapes, and of course on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv / ESPN 975. And a couple of things going on tonight. Number one, bottom of the hour, 8:30. WWE Hall of Famer, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, will join the program live. And I am really excited to talk to Jimmy. Jimmy has more amazing stories than anybody you can shake a stick at. And if you want to have fun talking about more than just wrestling, because he's had an unbelievable career, and his career is more than just wrestling. We'll talk to him bottom of the hour. First things first, though, and I will start with your Houston Astros. And Carlos Correa, Justin Verlander, obviously the two biggest names of Astros players who are no longer under contract. And Carlos Correa given a qualifying offer, to which we will address a little bit later on in the program. Justin Verlander giving a qualifying offer, and it's not yet made a decision. Has not yet made a decision, and I know some people are skeptical over, you know, what are Verlander's intentions? And I think part of that comes down to the extreme overblownness of, well, Justin Verlander wasn't in the stands cheering on his teammates. Justin Verlander's job was to rehab his arm. Rehab his arm. That's it. Period. The end. Rehab your ass off. Pushing 39, if you want to continue to have a career, your one and only job is rehab your ass off. And if that means he rehabs for 8 hours a day and then he goes home to Kate Upton and his child, so be it. He doesn't have to come out and do a dog and pony show just because Josh Reddick did a dog and pony show. I like Josh Reddick. I think it was pretty cool that he came out and supported his guys. Josh Reddick also didn't have a job. Right, Miles Straw came out, and Miles Straw was supporting his guys. Miles Straw's team did not go to the playoffs. Miles Straw played on this team for half a year. Well, kind of like two-thirds of a year. And he made that decision. He could have stayed home and done whatever the hell he wanted. But Miles Straw also was not rehabbing from a major injury, knowing that his contract is up at the end of the year and he needs to go get a new one. So while it's great that guys did come out and support the team, it's not, this guy's a bad person, because he didn't come out and support a team. He's been focused on his rehabilitation. I have no problem with that. Now, Justin's brother, Ben, happens to be, an analyst for MLB. And I know he's also, I think he's also on Fox Sports, and he does a few other things. And he joined the Killer Bees today. That's a nice get by them, by the way. And Ben Verlander talked about how Justin basically looks at the qualifying offer and pretty much changes his mind on what he wants to do fairly often.
I think if you had asked him
a month ago. I think the answer changes every day for him. Look, he's in a position, in my opinion, I don't know if we've ever seen anybody in the position he is. He hasn't pitched in 2 years. The last year he did pitch, he won the Cy Young Award. He's almost 39 years old. He's not appearing to slow down, and he's getting a qualifying offer from the team, which, you know, I think this situation in a nutshell is almost unheard of because of the production he's proven to have even at an older age. But to get a qualifying offer at his age without pitching for in a while is crazy. So I think, you know, even for him, the answer changes day to day.
Now, there's important things to note about Ben Verlander's answer there. And while it changes day to day is probably, you know, embellishing the point a bit, it drives home a reality that I don't think a lot of people understand. Verlander isn't just weighing, do I want to take $18.5 million for 1 year because the QO was 18.4? Do I want to take $18.5 million for 1 year, or do I want to get a multi-year contract from someplace that'll pay me, you know, maybe 23, 24, whatever it is, per season? It's not just about the money, because there's a QO involved. And while a lot, if you're here in Houston, you know, you definitely understand the idea of, well, if he rejects the QO and he signs somewhere else, we get a comp pick at the end of round two, because the Astros did not go over the tax this year. Therefore, they reset, and instead of having their comp pick be at the end of round four, it's out at the end of round two because they were not a taxpayer. Now the flip side. Whatever team signs him loses their top pick. And. See, the and part always gets you, right? The and always gets you. Not only do you lose a pick, but depending on where you are in revenue sharing, you could lose international signing bonus money as well. So if you look at it from this perspective, which is who wants to offer Justin Verlander a significant deal that Justin Verlander is interested in? Because the Astros aren't going to put the multi-year deal on the table. Maybe the Tigers want to do that. The Tigers, however, haven't been a good team as of late. And even this year, they were better. I mean, they lost. They were, what, 77-85. So they're still going to draft in the top half of the draft. Do you want to give up that pick to sign Justin Verlander, who maybe you'll have for 2 years? That doesn't make sense. If you're going to give up a high draft pick to sign Justin Verlander, then you have to be looking at him as, is he the missing piece to get you to glory? Now, the issues with that are, he is going to be 39. He has not pitched in 2 years. But as Ben said, the last time he pitched, well, he won the Cy Young Award. And you could make a case he should have won it the year before when it was given to Blake Snell, who threw like 180 innings, and Verlander was like 40 innings more. And Blake Snell was averaging like 5 1/3 innings per start. Now, if you think Justin Verlander is going to get you over the top, you give him the multi-year offer, and the hell with the draft pick. Now, if you're a team that pays into revenue sharing, you're a big market team, and most of the teams that are A, in contention, B, able to give that kind of a deal to that age pitcher, are big market teams who are probably paying into revenue sharing. They're also going to lose international signing bonus pool money. And as we have seen this money, look at what the Astros have done with this money. I mean, this has been, you know, as the Astros haven't had draft picks, they have kicked ass in the international pool. So these are all of the compensating factors when it comes to who wants to sign Justin Verlander. If you're Verlander and his agent and you're assessing the market, And what you're finding is, yeah, people are interested, but they're not interested in losing a draft pick for a guy they might have for 1 year, maybe two. They're not interested in losing the bonus pool money and a draft pick for a guy they might have for 1 year, maybe two. Comes with a ton of injury questions. You don't want to be, you know, waiting until June to get a deal. That could very well lead Justin Verlander back to the Astros on the qualifying offer. Now, look at it from the other point of view. If he stays with the Astros, what are the benefits to the Astros? What are the benefits to Justin Verlander? Well, because the Astros have some starting pitching depth, they don't have to, like, rush him out there. He's not like some teams, oh, look at our free agent prize. We've got to put him out there on opening day. The Astros aren't in that position. If you're the Astros, you can bring him along slow. You don't have to. Hell, if I'm the Astros and I have Justin Verlander, I might not start him until Memorial Day. Because I don't need Justin Verlander in April and May. I need Justin Verlander in September and October. And maybe when I bring him back, maybe when I bring him onto the team and put him in the rotation around Memorial Day, maybe I get him on a pitch count. Maybe we'll start at 80. Maybe we'll work our way up to 100. All right, five innings, you're done. You know, maybe when we get into July, maybe we'll let you go to six. But I'm trying to hold the bullets in the holster because I want him firing on all cylinders when we get to the middle of September, and I want him kicking ass in October because that's when I need Justin Verlander. I mean, the Astros showed you they don't need Justin Verlander to get through the regular season. They need Justin Verlander in October the most. They need the guy they can trust to take the ball game one, game five, maybe game four if they got a push. And he's going to get through five, six innings. Maybe more. He is going to put fear in the other team. Because they know if he's on, it's going to be a long night at the plate. It doesn't matter how good a hitter you are. If Justin Verlander is on, good luck. Throwing 97 miles an hour at the little event that he put on for scouts. And, you know, we still have got a couple of months here before pitchers and catchers report. Pitchers and catchers report in the middle of February. That's 3 months. If he's throwing 97 now, well, 3 months from now, that ought to be a really consistent 97, followed with maybe a little more sharpness on a breaking ball. Building up his wind so that he can throw a lot more pitches and come into spring training ready to go, in shape, ready to kick ass. But again, I don't need him to kill it right out of the gate. Because if I'm the Astros, like I said, you know, coming off Tommy John surgery, probably don't want to throw him more than 150 innings. Saw what happened to Matt Harvey. Or he's 39. Maybe the Astros don't give a damn. Maybe Justin Verlander doesn't give a damn because, hey, I'm 39 years old. If I come back from Tommy John surgery and I have a monster year like Matt Harvey did, but then my arm falls off, whatever, I'm still going to the Hall of Fame. If I can win a ring before my arm falls off, I'll take it. Maybe. I don't know what his mindset is. But if you tell me the Astros can bring Justin Verlander back on a qualifying offer, I'm telling you, that's a steal. You can't get a Justin Verlander-type pitcher for that price. Ever. Take it. Run. Welcome him with open arms, and I hope that when we get to October, he is mowing guys down. Coming up next, man, Yankee fans are such frauds.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So, I do think there is a possibility Verlander accepts the qualifying offer. I don't know how many teams will make him a multi-year offer, knowing that he turned down a QO and they got to pay up the draft pick and they got to pay up the international pool money. I mean, that's going to be a big part of whether or not he's going to get a deal from a team that he wants. Also involved in that is a team that he wants, because from everything that we've seen reported so far, it seems like it's Astros or Tigers for Verlander, right? That's it. Now, if you're Verlander, you take the QO this year, well, you don't have to worry about getting it again next year because you can only get it once. And then next year he's a free agent and he can go wherever the hell he wants, and there's no encumbrances on any team that wants to sign him. So maybe he says, you know what, for $18.5 million, I'll go try to get myself another ring. You know, does anybody doubt that if the Astros had a healthy Justin Verlander in 2021, that a parade would have been here and not in Atlanta? If the Astros had Gerrit Cole on their team this year, parade would have been here and not in Atlanta. So that ace, that workhorse, the front of the rotation, made a really big difference in the World Series. Now, Verlander, of course, one of the two big names that the Astros offered a qualifying offer to, the other being Carlos Correa. And Correa, who has turned into the team leader and basically the face of the franchise and been the one guy who would stand up in the media and take on all the nonsense that got thrown around about the Astros. He was the guy. Well, now that Correa is basically on the market and available, all those fan bases and all those players that had so much junk to talk about Carlos Correa, all suddenly, like, worshiping at his altar. What a surprise. Just like they did with George Springer last year. Oh, what a great teammate and a great leader George is. As soon as he got to Toronto, all of a sudden he was no longer dirty, rotten, filthy, stinking cheater. Funny how that works. About that. Well, Carlos Correa, of course, has been linked to the Yankees. Now, I would hope that just on Correa's pride and decency alone, he will only use the Yankees to drive up the price elsewhere and then hit them with the double rods and tell them to kiss his ass. Because the Yankees talked a ton of crap about the Astros, about him, about Altuve, all this nonsense. You know, like the Yankees somehow were some victim because the Yankees are always the white hat. Absolute nonsense. But right now, Yankees fans having to change their pants every 30 minutes due to the excitement over Carlos Correa's Twitter. That's right. Carlos Correa's Twitter has Yankee fans, well, let's just say babies aren't being born, but pants are being changed. Carlos Correa changed his Twitter bio to no longer include the Astros. Now, his Twitter pictures still include the Astros, but no longer does it, you know, have anything in the Astros in the description. Now it just says, from Santa Isabel, Puerto Rico. 258.8 thousand followers for one Carlos Correa. And Yankees fans are just falling all over themselves. Would you like to know who was one of the first pro-Yankee accounts to take the screenshot of Carlos Correa's new Twitter bio? It's a Twitter account called Talkin' Yanks. Would you like to know who runs Talkin' Yanks? Jomboy Media. So Jomboy, who loved talking all the junk on the Astros, basically, hey, everybody, look, Correa's kind of said he's leaving the Astros. Ooh, he might come here. He might come here. I got to change my pants. Such frauds. Such absolute frauds. Now, it's a week since Correa's camp told the Astros 5 years, 160, turn that sumbitch sideways and stick it straight up your candy derriere. Like I said, it's half the years and less than half the money that Frankie Lindor got. Now, there's nothing here that says Correa hates the Astros, but these loser Yankee guys, they certainly want to say that he hates the Astros. Yeah. Don't believe that. And then they're also talking about, oh, well, Justin Verlander will come to the Yankees. There was a whole thing on Yankees, I think it was Yankees Facebook, where they basically took like the top 10 free agents and just put them all on the Yankees and said, oh, we're just going to sign everybody. It's always fun in the off season, in hot stove season, to watch Yankee fans think they're going to sign the entire world. And then it doesn't actually happen. But for all the trash that they talked about Correa, they can't wait to have him wear pinstripes. And you know what? If they could get Jose Altuve too, they'd take him in a heartbeat. Cheater? What cheating? What's a trash can? We don't even know what that is. All we see are pinstripes. And that is exactly what would happen. Now, there's another report out that the Astros are one of a bunch of teams, including the Yankees and the Mets and the Phillies, interested in Starling Marte. Now, Marte was with the Marlins and got traded to the Oakland A's. Marte is a good player. Now, he's a guy who hit 289, OPS around 800, OPS plus 132, very good defensive player, not superstar elite, but very good defensive player. And he's also, I believe, going to be 33. But good player. He is 33. He turned 33 in October, so a month ago. And again, coming off a season where he hit 310, 12 homers, 47 stolen bases, 383 on base, 841 OPS. That's a really good stat line. When I compare it to his other stat lines, let's see, 2020 was a short season. I don't really want to count that. Let's go 2019. 295, 342, 845 OPS, 25 stolen bases, 23 homers. Pretty good. 2018, 20 homers, 33 steals, 277, 787 OPS. Not quite as good. But for his career, almost 290 average, almost 800 OPS, and he can steal bags. He plays good defense. He's won two gold gloves. But he's 33. He is the number one center fielder on the market. The Astros aren't really going to pay this guy big-time money one offseason after they failed to sign their own better center fielder just a year ago, right? Because that would be just hilariously stupid. good player, worth getting paid, but don't think you're paying a 33-year-old guy, you know, 5 years, 6 years. If you wouldn't pay George Springer at 31, 6 years, well, paying Starling Marte 4 years puts you at the exact same spot, except Marte has never been as good as George Springer. Coming up next, special guest time, WWE Hall of Famer, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, joins us next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, the greatest manager in the history of professional wrestling, WWE Hall of Famer, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Jimmy, welcome to the program, brother. How you doing?
Well, thank you guys so much. You know what? I'm sitting here at my house looking at Raw tonight.
And what are you seeing?
Well, I saw some great matches. I'm getting ready to see Rey Mysterio go up against Bobby Lashley.
Now, those are always fun, Matt. The whole the big monster guy against little guy who bounces around like Spider-Man, those are always fun matches for a crowd. Everybody always gets into those type of things. And I know, you know, WrestleMania tickets just went on sale on Friday, and that's going to be 4 hours north of here in Dallas at Jerry World. So that is that is the marquee event. It's the biggest event that they do. You have been a part of WWE going back to the very first WrestleMania. But, Jimmy, I have a couple of questions for you, because you didn't start out as a pro wrestling manager. In fact, your amazing career goes back and sounds a little something like this.
I keep on dancing.
Jimmy, you were part of a band that had a top four song on the Billboard Hot 100. How did you go from rock and roll star to wrestling?
And you know what? We finally, after all these years, we finally wound up getting a gold single off of that, too. We had four albums out, and I think we had about seven or eight singles out at the time, too. But you know what? It was kind of a crazy career. We were in high school. Jerry Lawler and I went to school together. He went to professional wrestling, and I went to music. And all of a sudden, our little group, the Gentrys, we want to play a show called Talent Party, which was in Memphis. And then we got to go to Ted Mack's Original Amateur Hour, which was kind of like an early version of you know, what they have now with American Idol. And we went down to Miami Beach, Florida at the Jackie Gleason Theater, and we won three appearances. We got disqualified our third appearance, but we still had to appear because we'd signed a record deal with MGM Records. And then all of a sudden we had this big hit single, and we started touring with Dick Clark all over the country. One of our first tours was with Chuck Berry and the Beach Boys. And I remember something that Dick Clark said to us. He said, "Remember, when you're on stage, guys, sometimes you might feel great, sometimes you might not. But give the people their money's worth. But remember one thing. If you dress like the audience, one day you're going to wind up sitting in the audience," which means be colorful. You know, give the people something a little different.
It's just like the idea. Here's you with your band, the Gentrys, and while not primary vocals on that song, you did primary vocals on a lot of songs. And to go from having a song that's number four on the Billboard Hot 100 into wrestling, and you mentioned you went to high school with Jerry Lawler. How did Jerry Lawler convince you, "Hey, you know what, Jimmy? Forget all that music stuff. Come be in pro wrestling with me"?
Well, you know what? He came over to my house one day and said, "Look, I'm getting ready to cut a wrestling album. Would you help me?" And I said, "Yeah." You know, it's so funny in this business, after all the years, everybody in wrestling wants to be in music, and everybody in music wants to be in wrestling. But I figured that out, right? But Jerry came over. We went and we cut an album together, a wrestling album. It did real well. And then he came to me and said, "Look," he said, "man, the music thing's been great for you, But he said, I would love for you to join our company. You'll manage me. You can do publicity. You can write music for us. You can do a little bit of everything. And I said, you know, it might not be a bad idea because I always loved professional wrestling anyhow. On our tours with Dick Clark, whatever city we were in, if we were down in Georgia, I'd be watching the American Dream Dusty Rhodes on Saturday mornings. If we were in Carolina, it'd be Ric Flair I'd be trying to watch on Saturday mornings. So it was just something that I always really loved. So it was a marriage made in heaven for me. And then all of a sudden, we did pretty good down there. And 6 years later, I had the magic phone call from Vince McMahon. And I said, Fiend, don't fail me now, baby. And I went to New York City, and I got to appear on the very first WrestleMania.
Now, we're talking with WWE Hall of Famer, the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, greatest manager in the history of pro wrestling. Jimmy, you know, some of the stuff that you guys did, you and Jerry, in Memphis is still amazing even today. And, you know, as somebody who was part of the first WrestleMania and somebody who's now been around for, you know, all these WrestleManias, and we see, you know, when a guy is popular and they get a huge pop, or when the heel is over and the crowd just boos them mercilessly. But, you know, for the most part, if you're a bad guy, you know, the bad guy, the heel, if you're the bad guy and you come out and you start talking junk, people boo, but you don't have to worry about, you know, somebody jumping the rails and, you know, and trying to kill you or, you know, coming after you in the parking lot. You did stuff in Memphis with Jerry that is still legendary. One where, you know, Jerry breaks his leg and you come out and say, what do you do with a horse and it breaks its leg? You shoot him. And it's an all-time great promo. Did you, as a heel in Memphis, ever have to worry about, man, I did so good tonight, they're going to riot?
Well, you know what? Back in the early Memphis days, as of all the territories back then, it was a little less security, and we were kind of able to be kind of carte blanche on what we said. You know, there's no script writer, so everything we said came from our heart, you know. And it was all about trying to draw money because there was no big contracts back then. Whatever we got part of the house, right? And so Memphis was our biggest night, you know, Monday night, Coliseum, Tuesday night, Louisville Gardens, Evansville, Indiana, Wednesday. And every night we were somewhere, but all that money at the end of the week went together. So we had to really talk the people into coming to the matches. And we really believed in what we said, and the people did too. So it really turned out great for me and great back then. And of course, we had a lot of instances went on. I remember one when I was managing the Iron Sheik before he went to New York. And we were out there, and I had the Iranian flag, and he was doing his interview. And while we were doing it, Lawler, who was half promoted the territory along with Jerry Jarrett, they were showing a picture of this helicopter going down, which me and the Sheik didn't know it. So all of a sudden, after we get through the interview, they put us in the back, go, here, get in the back here. So there's a guy with his son. I guess his son, God bless him, had been on that helicopter that went down. He didn't get killed, but he got captured. And so when they were showing all that, this guy, oh, my God, they came to the station with a gun and with a rifle and everything. So the police had to come out. We didn't even know it. Me and Sheik did. And that guy followed me around for about a month everywhere I went back in Memphis back in the day. But I finally convinced him, hey, look, please, you know, this is not anything toward y'all. You know, it was just an interview. So it all worked out good. Everybody became friends after that. But we had a close call, but everybody did back then. We had better security up in New York, of course, and all of the towns that we're in, for, you know, starting after WrestleMania 1. But, you know, it's been a great career from music to wrestling. It's been awesome.
Yeah, Jimmy, a lot of people, you know, have, you know, especially they're wrestling fans, they know about, you know, the program between Jerry Lawler and Andy Kaufman. I think a lot of people don't realize how big a part you played in that. What was it like working that particular angle with Andy and Jerry?
Well, Andy was great. I remember I was in Lawler's house when Bill Apter had called out there and said, look, we've got a guy up here right off taxi, Andy Kaufman, and he's doing the Intergender Championship where he fights women. So we brought him down to Memphis. And all of a sudden, the next thing we know, you know, we had a big program with him and Lawler. Then I started managing him. And you know, he used to stay at my house some. We'd take trips together. But Andy was great. He loved this business tremendously. His favorite wrestler was Nature Boy Buddy Rogers. And after every show on Monday night, we were the last ones in the ring, I'd have to drive him over to Graceland so he could sit outside and watch the people come and go at Graceland back then. That was before it really got so popular where they built all the the shops and everything across the street, you know. And that's what he loved. And then he had to stay at my house or I'd take him to a hotel. But we were together for almost a little over a year. And I had a great time together, but he was awesome. He really was.
We're talking with the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, WWE Hall of Famer, on the HRMP guest line. You know, Jimmy, you created one of the first stables, the first family of wrestling, and it had a lot of names that a lot of old-time wrestling fans or people my age are going to recognize, and King Kong Bundy and Rick Rude, Leaping Lanny Poffo, Jim the Anvil Neidhart, Macho Man Randy Savage, the Iron Sheik. All of these guys ultimately, like you, kind of went through Memphis and into then WWF in New York. You managed a lot of these guys in WWF. How did that all happen? Like, did you have to bring them in? Did you have to, like, you know, how did it work to get guys into WWF back in the mid-80s?
Well, you know what really happened? It started down in Memphis. I had Rick Rude in Memphis, which later on Bobby Heenan managed him in New York. And I had Jim Neidhart in Memphis, which later on I managed him. I had King Kong Bundy in Memphis, the Iron Sheik and everything. And so when I went to New York, I think Vince and them saw how much enthusiasm I had with everything. So he really gave me a lot of people. You know, Vince is the one that brought the megaphone from Japan and said, "This is going to be your gimmick." And I said, "Oh, thank you. Can I paint it up?" He said, "Do whatever you want to with it." Vince was great. He's always been great. And he let me do my colorful jackets and everything else. But I was able to manage Jim Neidhart. Then we put Bret Hart with us for the Hart Foundation. I had Jacques Rougeau. I just thought about that in Memphis. And when I got up there, I had him and Raymond, the Rougeau brothers. And later on, we turned Jacques into the Mountie. And it was just, everything was just so spontaneous and great. Matter of fact, I had the Honky Tonk Man in Memphis, but he was one of the Blonde Bombers then. Then in New York, he became the Honky Tonk Man. And the first time I met Hulk was in Memphis. When I had my band down there, and we were playing, I was just coming by the Coliseum before we went to do our shows at night at the Ramada Inn. You know, back in the day, you know, once you have your record, you're on tour all the time, but when you really don't have the hits, then you wind up playing the clubs. But we make good money without traveling and playing the clubs, and that's when Lauder used to come by. Hulk used to come by. He was Terry Bollea back then. He used to come by all the time. But Hulk and I have been friends for over 43 years. And people always ask me, how did that work? And I said, two things. I've always told him the truth when he asked me something, and I've never borrowed money from him.
Isn't that the winner, that second one? That's the winner of every successful relationship.
And we talk every day or every other day. He's got a great beach bar here called Hogan's Hangout. He's got his shop here. And I said, Hook, for you to have a shop that's been in business for 9 years, I said, you must have been doing something right, buddy.
That is awesome. Now, Jimmy, you know, you've been, you know, part of the WWE family now for, you know, closing in on, what, close 37 years or so? Maybe longer?
This is WrestleMania coming up now. Yeah, you're right, almost 38 years. Because, I came in before the first WrestleMania, 2 months before, and I was on the first. I tell everybody the truth. I said, look, people always ask me, what's the most important WrestleMania? I said, oh, my God, it had to be number one, because if number one had been successful, we would have been doing WrestleMania 38 coming up. Of course, I enjoyed being on WrestleMania 3 in front of 93,000 people. You know, I had three big matches on that show. But like I said, I've just been blessed doing a lot of the music. You know, me and my partner, Jim McGuire, we wrote Sexy Boy by Shawn Michaels and The Wolfpack by Nash and Hall. We wrote the Million Dollar Man song, Money, Money, Money. One of my favorites is Dusty Rhodes. Here's a quick story. Vince came to me and said, Dusty wants you to do him a song. I said, okay, great. And so I went to Dusty and said, Dusty, I'm going to write it about the common man. He goes, I love it, I love it. And I said, what do you want in it? He said, how about giving me a cowbell on the front of it? I said, cowbell on the front. How about some horns? I said, do you want horns? Okay. He said, how about some chick singers, backup singers? I said, okay, backup singers. I said, you know what, Dusty, everything you gave me, why don't you just write the song yourself? You know, and he went, oh, that was funny. But we put the song together. And we wrote a lot of them all together, about 50-something songs for WWE. And when I went to WCW, we did about 80 for them, including the Nitro Girls and a lot of songs like that. But we just had a great run doing music and then doing the wrestling. Like I said, I was in Dallas this past week with The Undertaker, and Stephanie McMahon was there for our pre-ticket sales. But April the 2nd, April the 3rd, it's going to be, you know, unbelievable. It's going to be stupendous, really. Two big days, the second and third, WrestleMania 38, AT&T Stadium. And Dallas, Texas, right there in Arlington, and the people have been so wonderful. We had a great turnout last Wednesday night for our pre-ticket sales. We sure did. But it's going to be great this year.
I am looking forward to it. In fact, I am still battling my wife right now because my son's going to graduate high school this year. And WrestleMania is like a bucket list thing, right? I mean, I've been to the Royal Rumble several times. I've been to SummerSlam. I've been to Elimination Chamber. I've been to like every WWE pay-per-view, but I've never been to WrestleMania. So my son's like, Dad, WrestleMania's in Dallas. It's not that far. Because he's looking at going to school in college at UT in Dallas. So he knows how far it is and what the drive is. He's like, Dad, we got to go to WrestleMania. And I'm like, hell yeah, we got to go to WrestleMania. And then my daughter, who's a freshman in high school, she's like, hey, what about me? I want to go to WrestleMania.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And then my wife's like, no. And we all looked at her like, what do you mean no? Like, and she's, you know, she's pulling up the thing and going, well, I don't think that I want you to spend all that money to go up there. And I'm like, this is a bucket list thing. This is like once in a lifetime that we're going to get to go to WrestleMania, and it's right here. We don't have to go fly halfway across the country. We need to go to WrestleMania. But she's being a stick in the mud, and I got to figure out how I'm going to convince her otherwise. But I'm working on it.
Well, it's very easy. You say, sweetheart, you go to WrestleMania with us. If you don't have a good time, then I will take you on the most unbelievable vacation you've ever been on in your life. But I'm going to tell you something. Once she goes there, when she gets through, she goes, what are we going to the next show? I'm telling you right now, because there'll be stars there. There'll be celebrities. There'll probably be music groups. Two big days. Pick the day you want. And it's so great because you could sit there and watch all of our fans. And you know, it's fan-friendly. And it's just, I'm telling you, once she goes, it'll be the most unbelievable spectacle. When you pull up, you'll see probably 15 or 16 semi-trucks. You know, I remember an article I saw about a year ago, a guy from the newspaper in one of the cities, when he said, it was bigger than the Rolling Stones concert. He said, you will not believe the buses and the semi-trucks that come up to bring all the pyro and all the staging and everything for WWE. I'm telling you, it's really, and look, to be going for 38 years, you got to be doing something right, buddy.
Jimmy, as somebody who has seen all the WrestleManias from one to now, how much planning and prep and work went into creating, say, like the early WrestleManias versus how much goes into it now?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know what? I've never really worked in the office up there, so I know when we finished one WrestleMania, we were ready to start the next one. You know, we already started to plan for it back in the day. And now, with how big everything is now and what you've got to go up against, because, you know, you got football and baseball and basketball and hockey and just concerts, so much stuff that you're competing with. And it just makes it such much more magnificent. And you want to do something different every year. So I'm sure they have to book a lot of the superstars. They don't let it out, but book a lot of the superstars and music ahead of time and celebrities and everything. But I promise you, every year they go, how can you out-top yourself and outdo yourself? Well, brother, you watch this one in Dallas. It'll be spectacular.
Jimmy, you have managed some of the all-time greats, King Kong Bundy, the Hart Foundation, the Honky Tonk Man, the Funks, Hulk Hogan. Of all the people that you've managed over all your years in wrestling, what was the most fun program that you ever did?
Well, you know what? Being Honky Tonk Man with Jake Roberts was great. What a great program. The Nasty Boys, when I managed them, that was great. But with the Hearts and the Bulldogs, I enjoyed that so much because the Bulldogs, Davey Boy and Dynamite, were so good. And they worked so well with the Hart Foundation. Those matches worked tremendous. And then I really enjoyed the Mountie when he was going up against, Big Boss Man. That was a lot of fun. But I love doing the stuff with Hulk. When Hulk and Brutus, we were going up against a team I used to manage called the Million Dollar Man, Irwin R. Scheister, and who was IRS, and, of course, Ted DiBiase. But all the programs I've been, Greg Valentine, one of the first people I managed when I went up there, the programs he was in with Tito Santana on the figure four, leg lock matches, those were awesome. But I tell you what, everything I've done, I've just really enjoyed being there. I've enjoyed doing my jackets. I've enjoyed working with the people, and it's just, you know, I've been so blessed all these years to be in the business you love, do music what you love, and to be touring my whole life. You know, just going out there after 38 years and being part of in Dallas, Texas with The Undertaker. I mean, you go in there and you get Big E on your right. On the left, you got The Undertaker. You got Stephanie McMahon and NXT matches. It don't get any bigger than that, baby.
Man, Greg Valentine and Tito Santana wrestling for the Intercontinental Championship is right around when I first started getting really into wrestling. What is that? That's probably like, what, 84, 85, something around there?
Right.
So I was 10, 12 years old. And like this was, you had wrestling on Saturday morning on TV in New York. And they were starting to do this thing on MSG, I think it was, where it was like Saturday night's main event. And I would always try to figure out, you know, how am I going to stay up late enough to watch this? Because, you know, I had to be in bed before that show would come on at 10 o'clock. And I'd try to find a way to sneak in to watch it. But that was one of the very first rivalries that I remember from when I first started watching wrestling. That is awesome. He is the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, greatest manager in WWE history, probably greatest manager in professional wrestling history, WWE Hall of Famer, class of 2005. Oh, and he also had a number four hit song on the Billboard Top 100 in 1965 with the Gentrys. Amazing career. Jimmy, I wish I had about 3 hours to talk with you, but you'd probably get tired of talking to me for that long. But
well, you've been great. You've been great. You really know your business. And like I said before, I love you talking about the manager thing because I love Paul Heyman and Jimmy Cornette. And, of course, Bobby Heenan was unbelievable, and Fuji and Blassie and the Slickster. I mean, there's so many people that I was able to brush up against, and to be mentioned with any of those guys as a manager is tremendous. And like I said before, I can't wait to get to Texas. You know why? My favorite restaurant's there.
Oh, what's that?
Whataburger.
You know what? Well, when I first, I got so many stories of Whataburger, Jimmy. Oh, my goodness. When I first came down here, you know, there's no Whataburger in New York. And they're like, hey, have you been to Whataburger? And I'm like, what? Have you been to Whataburger? Water what? Oh, you're from New York. It's what a burger. And I said, no, what the hell is that? So they show me where it is, and I go in there, and I just got off air, and it's like midnight, and I walk in, and there's nobody there. And out of nowhere, this little old lady comes up behind me and goes, hi, welcome to Whataburger, how can I help you? I swear I nearly jumped out of my skin. I'm like, lady, who the hell are you talking to? I turn around, she's talking to me. Now, in Brooklyn, if you go into Burger King at 2 o'clock in the morning, they're like, what do you want? You want fries? 1406, next. It's not quite the same. It was a big culture shock for me with Whataburger, but Big fan of the Whataburger. Jimmy, man, I appreciate you coming on. It's so awesome. WrestleMania tickets are on sale now at Jerry World in Dallas. Jimmy, thank you so much for taking some time with us tonight, man. I really appreciate it. I hope we can talk again soon.
Well, we love you, and don't forget, talk your wife into going to WrestleMania 38, AT&T Stadium, the 2nd and the 3rd. It's going to be stupendous. Trust me, 2 big days of it. It's going to be great. Well, look, we love you. Thank you. Tell everybody at your station hello, and we appreciate you keeping the dream alive for another year.
The Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, WWE Hall of Famer, with us on the HRNP guest line. This is Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Man, I had a lot of fun talking with Jimmy Hart, the Mouth of the South, WWE Hall of Famer. And I'm going to have to use some of his talking points on my wife about trying to get to WrestleMania, because I really want to go to WrestleMania. And I know if I, put under the Christmas tree, you know, a couple of things, and my kids see tickets for WrestleMania, they will think it's the greatest Christmas ever. I want to give my kids the greatest Christmas ever. I have to figure out how the hell I'm going to get this one past the missus. Like Jimmy said, maybe I just got to, you know, try to convince her to go. So my wife's not into wrestling at all. Now, if The Rock was still wrestling, she'd be 100% in just to see The Rock. So you see where her loyalties lie. But for, like, most wrestling, she's just really not all that into it. But, you know, Jimmy's right. It's not just wrestling. They'll have five, six different music acts that'll come out and perform. And there'll be all kinds of of entertainment stars there as well. It's a huge thing. And of course, I'm going to go. I'm going for both days. I'm not doing that one day or the day thing. We're doing both days. We're spending the whole weekend in Dallas, and it's like, yeah, peace. I'll see you later. But that would be a pretty wild event, especially, you know, because like I said, my son graduates high school this year. Like, how cool would that be? Going to WrestleMania! And then over the summer, he's going to Seabase, which is like a high adventure trip with Boy Scouts, where they'll be, you know, scuba diving and stuff like that and having all kinds of fun and stuff that, you know, in New York, Boy Scouts never do. But down here, you can do all cool stuff. And then he's going to go to college. Like, how awesome!
And he's going to college in Dallas, right?
Yeah, he's looking to UT Dallas is his number one choice.
Okay, that's because I went to 1 year UT Tyler before transferring to Austin, and Dallas it does have like the highest like GPA and stuff requirements of all the like system schools.
So my son's grades are awesome. But he wants to go for interactive media, character design, and stuff like that. And they've got the best program. It's a nationally ranked program at UT Dallas. Now, they have one at Austin, but it's not as good, and they don't have the same technology. Whereas the one in Dallas, they've got more technology.
It's like
I mean, they actually have a motion capture studio that there's like three in Texas.
Wow.
You know, where you go in and they put all the electrodes around you.
Yeah,
and
ping pong balls or whatever, yeah.
You do whatever the actions are, and then they slap the skin over it, and it creates character motion. It's wild how they do it. All I can tell you is they were showing him how to do it, and I was like, I want to go back to school because I want to play with the toys. All this cool stuff, I want to play with the toys. Important stuff to note, tomorrow – I'll be on with Nate Griffin, Fox 26, in the morning, probably the 8 o'clock hour, early in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm in for Charlie Palillo tomorrow at 10, I'm slated to be on TMZ Live tomorrow. Now, I don't know what they're going to talk to me about.
Yeah, yet. What'd you do?
But
are they asking you questions as you're walking to your car or something?
No, not like that. They asked me to come on the show as a guest, and they said they'll shoot me all the topics what we're going to talk about tomorrow morning, and they want to have me as a guest on the show. So I wasn't going to say no to TMZ. So I'm going to have a busy day tomorrow, and then Wednesday morning I'm on a plane at 6 a.m. heading out to Vegas for Crawford and Porter. It's going to be an awesome fight. Can't wait to see them. While I'm out there, Booker T, Reality of Wrestling, they've got a huge show in Vegas the night before the Crawford Porter fight. So, get to check out those guys as well. And, Wednesday, I believe there is a Golden Knights game. So I might have to jam my way in there as well. So, gonna have a lot of fun seeing a lot of stuff. I see hockey, wrestling, boxing. I mean, I'm ready to go to Vegas, baby. It's like most people go to gamble or play cards. No, I'm there to go. Like see sports, which is awesome. I love the fact that Vegas is becoming a sports hub. It's great. All right, we'll get back into your Houston Astros and some more stuff around Major League Baseball on the other side. This is Lightheads.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.